Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, March 5th, 2012. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Oil and gas drilling fracking local law preemption bill passes Senate committee. Two final ExxonMobil megaloads due tomorrow night. Four protesters get in the way of 865,000 pounds of megaloads Sunday night. And Friends of the Clearwater appeals Clearwater National Forest travel plan. We'll have details on those and other stories coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho Senate voted 5-4 today to lift the 6 new charter schools per year statewide cap. The bill will allow up to 1 new charter school per year within each public school district boundary within the state. The bill has already passed the Senate. The Idaho Education Association has voiced disapproval for the bill, saying it's not a good idea to expand the Idaho school system during a deep recession. The Idaho House today voted 55-15 to increase state workers' pay by 2% across the board. Republican Representative Steve Hartken of Twin Falls said the $10 million raise is an imperfect way to thank state employees who have been working hard under difficult conditions. The bill now moves on to the Senate. Governor C.L. Butch Otter had proposed a one-time 3% bonus for state workers in his budget, contingent on the state hitting revenue targets. The House voted 66-3 today in favor of a bill which requires the state land board to sell all business operations and all improvements on state-owned land, keeping the board strictly in the land management business. The bill came about after top statewide elected officials who populate the 6-person land board clashed publicly last year over the purchase of a Boise area business called Affordable Self Storage. Members of the Idaho business community said such investments gives the public sector an unfair advantage over privately held companies. Governor C.L. Butch Otter criticized the 2010 purchase, and Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin defended it. The measure now goes to the state Senate. Tea Party Republican Gresham Bauma of Troy has said he has mailed in his paperwork to run for Senate in the new District 5, which includes all of Latah and Benoit counties. Bauma, who ousted 9-term Republican Senator Gary Schroeder in the 2010 primary and then lost in the general election, will face Schroeder's son Barrett in the May primary. Barrett Schroeder kicked off his campaign last week by criticizing the Tea Party movement for morphing into a militia movement in northern Idaho. Incumbent Democrat Senator Dan Schmidt will also run for re-election. Former Republican candidate for governor and independent candidate for U.S. Senate Rex Rammel has filed for a District 7 seat in the Idaho House. Rammel, a former elk rancher from southeastern Idaho, now lives in Kuski, which is in the new District 7, which includes the entirety of Idaho, Clearwater, and Shoshone counties, plus a small portion of Bonner County. Rammel will take on Republican freshman Representative Shannon McMillan of Silverton in the May primary. The Moscow-based environmental group Friends of the Clearwater has appealed the Clearwater National Forest travel plan on the grounds that it violates the overall forest plan that went into effect in 1987 by not sufficiently protecting wildlife and habitat. Friends of the Clearwater Ecosystem Defense Director Gary McFarlane told the Lewiston Tribune, "We feel the Forest Service violated its own plan in terms of wildlife protections, watersheds, and diversity of recreational opportunities. The Forest Service has long claimed it can provide non-motorized backcountry experiences in wildlands not designated or recommended by the agency as wilderness, By refusing to protect areas like Wheatus Creek and Pot Mountain, this plan contradicts those earlier statements of the agency. The plan does ban motorized access to 200 miles of trails where it was allowed before and takes 1 million acres out of the motorized part of the forest. However, some of the areas where motorized vehicles would be allowed are wilderness study areas. A total of 26 people or groups appealed the plan. Clearwater Forest officials threw out six of those appeals, saying they did not comment on the draft plan earlier, which means they don't have standing to appeal. Forest spokesperson Elaine Murphy says forest employees are contacting the rest to find out if they want to participate in a resolution process. The Idaho and Clearwater County Commissions are both appealing the plan on the grounds the Forest Service did not make enough allowances for motorized trail use on the forest. ExxonMobil has scheduled the final two U.S. 95 tar sands shipments for tomorrow night. One of the split megaloads will be 415,000 pounds, 215 feet long, 24 feet wide, and 15 feet high. The other load is 225,000 pounds, 135 feet long, 24 feet wide, and 15 feet high. The two will travel independently from each other after 8 p.m. from the port of Lewiston until they reach a staging area about a mile south of Moscow. They'll then proceed through the city of Moscow together and then travel separately to a parking area just south of Coeur d'Alene by early Wednesday morning. They're scheduled to continue through Coeur d'Alene and into Montana Wednesday night via Interstate 90. They are expected to take Interstate 15 into Alberta, where their final destination is a bitumen processing plant being built for the first stage of ExxonMobil's Kearl Oil Sands project near Fort McMurray. ExxonMobil Canadian subsidiary Imperial Oil has already announced a second phase of the Kearl Oil Sands project. Two megaload protesters were arrested as they sat down in a crosswalk in front of a convoy of three ExxonMobil tar sand shipments and support vehicles in Moscow last night at the intersection of 4th and Washington Streets. The megaload shipments, totaling about 865,000 pounds, were announced Saturday and arrived in Moscow at about 11 p.m. last night. As the loads approached, they were met by about 40 protesters with votive candles, Guy Fawkes masks, the Moscow Peace Band, and a mic check.
We stand against the most destructive project, in the history of mankind. The poisoning of our land, water, and air.
Megaload convoys generally travel slowly down Washington Street, but last night's convoy seemed especially slow as it approached. Those among the protesters at the intersection of 3rd Street noticed the megaloads had stopped at 4th Street, but it was difficult to see what was going on because of the lights. Some ran to 4th Street to see what had happened.
All I know, I came up and they were pulling Cass to the ground. Uh-huh. I'm a little worried because of his back, so I tried to stand and make sure he's okay. Right. The cop wouldn't let me get too near. He blocked me off with his bicycle and poked me with his bicycle handles to make sure I would get back.
Right.
To protecting my friend. So far, Jeannie and Cass have been held down, and I didn't see anybody else.
There was somebody else who was just hauled off over a van. He's being put in a van.
No, they just dragged the men off.
They only arrested the men.
They arrested them.
How many?
They dragged off Jim Prawl and Cass Davis.
They're dragged off.
Well, I assume they're arrested.
And what happened? You guys sat in the street?
We just got out in the street, and then I got tackled by a Idaho State policeman who works for Exxon.
So you're standing.
I got dragged off.
Yeah, I was sitting down, and they dragged me off.
You know, there used to be honor in the Idaho State Police. There's no more honor.
You're just
mercenary.
Mercenary, dishonor.
You're a discredit to your profession.
Goons that work for corporations. They're disgusting.
That was Jeannie McHale, who had sat in the street and did not get arrested. And before that, we heard Erica Greenwell, who was watching her partner, Cass Davis, get arrested. Jim Prawl was also arrested, and grandmother Pat Monger also sat in the street and was dragged off. KRFP reporter Paulie D. was able to talk to Davis and Prawl while they were handcuffed and in custody with some difficulty.
Hey, what's
sir,
going?
Go back. Go back now. Okay. This is off limits.
All right.
Go back.
Okay.
Thank you.
So,
we need to get back.
Is the sidewalk okay?
Back there by the corner and be okay.
This right here. Right here? So, what's going on there, Cass? What happened?
I was arrested for trying to save the planet's future.
Hey, so, what was that all about? What? Why'd you come out tonight to do that?
I had a stand.
Just taking a stand. And so...
My nephews and nieces, who aren't going to get to see the same planet.
So what do you think? Have they told you what they're going to do this evening?
No.
What you're charged with?
We're just under arrest.
Have you been charged yet?
No.
So you're
going to jail.
You're just going to jail. No charges, huh?
I think that's the
save the corporations.
That's pretty
corporations from the people.
That's pretty amazing. Wow. Okay, well.
So no charges, you're just sitting in the van.
And so how many other people are in there with you, Cass?
Just two of us.
Just two of you. Was there a young woman who was with you on the street there earlier?
No, there were two ladies, elders in their 50s and 60s with us.
Oh, really? But they didn't get arrested.
No, they were held back from officers from being able to sit down in the road and didn't get arrested.
I see. Okay.
In fact, Cass and I had to run back out.
Oh, you had to run back out?
Yeah, we had to escape and get back out on here. But we stopped him for a moment.
You did.
It's all delaying tactics. To save the Earth, we're just trying to slow things down.
Bring attention to the issue.
Great. What's your name, sir?
Jim Prawl.
The procedure, they were arrested, and they'll be taken up to the courthouse, or up to the jail.
So. And then, so, have they been charged with anything?
It'll be obstructing. They've been charged with obstructing.
Obstructing just officers, obstructing the loads, obstructing...
It's the code is resisting and obstructing. When the officer tells them to get out of the street and they refuse to get out of the street, and they're resisting and obstructing the officer and doing their duties.
I see. So they were given a warning?
To my knowledge, they were given a warning.
That was Paulie D. speaking with Moscow Police Lieutenant Paul Kwiatkowski about last night's arrests. Before that, you heard him interviewing Cass Davis and Jim Prawl, who were handcuffed in the police van at the time of the interview. I also spoke with Zach Johnson, who saw the arrests from a closer vantage point at 4th and Washington Streets.
They were sitting in the crosswalk. The group of four kind of got into the crosswalk in a pile, sort of a lump, and because they were being manhandled on their way sitting down.
Right.
And so they were sitting down already pretty much in custody, and then they were resisted a little bit, got drug off the road.
After the protest was over, protesters Pat Monger and Jeannie McHale spoke with KRFP about why they sat down in the street in front of the megalodes.
And you were intent on getting arrested?
Yeah.
And
prepared, but they just dragged me off the street, and then they were standing right there. You know, they were holding Jeannie down. They weren't holding me down because I just was, you know, I said, well, you know, if I start out there again, they're just going to grab me. And there were five or six of them standing right there, so I didn't see any sense in trying to, you know, get back out there. So I just stood there, and I guess I was kind of a chicken because I thought, all these big guys, you know, I'm not going to go out there and risk my life. So
So, briefly, what's your reason for trying to get arrested or trying to block the load?
Well, because I just want to make us, I want us to get noticed because we don't want this. And my main concern is I do not want the whole deal with the Alberta tar sands. It's a hideous, horrible, nasty mess that needs to be stopped. And I, it's worth it to me to do anything I can. Getting arrested is a small thing. But just to call attention to the fact that there are people, maybe other people, if they see us willing to sit out in the street, maybe some other people will start standing up and saying, yeah, what is this, what's this tar sands thing? And they'll look into it. And then they'll see what a horrible, horrible thing it is. And then they'll start putting up some protests, you know, and saying, we don't want this.
You have an answer to that question?
What was the question?
Why were you blocking the...
Well, because there's a whole bunch of other companies that want to use the Port of Lewiston and use this route to get to this same tar sands project, and we need to send a clear message to them that we aren't going to tolerate it. We're not going to be accessories to genocide and climate change and increased cancer rates and all the other ecological damage that the tar sands intends to cause. We're not going to help with that.
Right. Okay. So even though it's the end of this set of loads from ExxonMobil, you think it's more are going to come up 95?
Oh, there's a whole bunch of other companies that want to use the Port of Lewiston.
Yeah, maybe up 12 or something.
Well,
if they get that.
12, 95. You know,
the extractive industry is outsourcing their gear, the whole mining, everything, and they all want to bring it through the states.
Yeah,
don't want to mess up their.
And if we can do something in a little town like Moscow, Idaho, what's wrong with Spokane and Missoula and all the other towns that might have these guys go through? They need to get off their butts and do something.
That was Jeannie McHale and Pat Monger speaking about why they risked arrest by going into Washington Street in front of 3 megalode tar sand shipments last night. You also heard a short interjection from protester Sharon Cousins there. There have been a total of 12 arrests related to the protests of the ExxonMobil tar sands shipments heading north on U.S. 95. 8 of those arrests were for civil disobedience, and 4 of the arrests were people who were monitoring the megaloads and did not intend to get arrested. The 6 arrested for civil disobedience August 26th were convicted of obstruction charges. The cases of 2 of the monitors arrested while sitting in a car along U.S. 95 in Kootenai County August 27th are still pending, and the 2 people arrested in Moscow for riding their bikes in the street near a megalode convoy October 6th pled guilty to lesser charges. Last night's 3 loads were expected to be the second-to-last tar sand shipments heading north from the Port of Lewiston for a while. 2 of the 70 split megaloads that were at the Port of Lewiston remain. One of last night's loads was 415,000 pounds, 215 feet long and 24 feet wide. Another was 250,000 pounds, 150 feet long and 22 feet wide. And another was 200,000 pounds, 150 feet long and 22 feet wide. The 3 loads were 2 lanes wide and blocked traffic as they headed north on U.S. 95. All 3 traveled individually except through Moscow, where they joined together in a single convoy. The largest load was on a special hydraulic trailer and traveled with a push cab and was expected to park for the day just south of Coeur d'Alene. The other 2 loads were on conventional trailers and were expected to park for the day before dawn this morning at a parking area on Interstate 90, just west of the Idaho-Montana state line. You're tuned to KRFP Moscow. This is the KRFP Evening Report. The Senate Resources Committee voted 6-3 Friday afternoon in favor of a bill that takes away the right of counties and cities in Idaho to regulate most aspects of oil and gas drilling, including fracking, within their boundaries. House Bill 464 has already passed in the House and now heads to the full Senate. Friday's vote ended 2 days of hearings on the bill, where the oil and gas industry argued that local laws would make it too difficult to develop wells in the state. Washington County recently passed an ordinance regulating oil and gas drilling, which the oil and gas industry wants overturned. by the state law. Republican Senator Steve Baer of Blackfoot said, "I would submit that the state already has complete and total authority over gas and oil. I find this bill to be very reasonable. I find it to be spot on." The two Democrats on the committee voted against the bill, as did one Republican, Dean Cameron of Rupert. Cameron noted the bill gives the oil and gas industry unprecedented freedom from regulation that no other industry in Idaho enjoys. He said, "By passing this bill the way we are, we're making it easier to locate an oil and gas well than any other facility. We're making it easier because they do not have to go through the same process." Activist Amanda Buchanan of Weezer said, "Communities should have the right to determine what development is appropriate within their borders. This bill gives one industry the ability to process and develop natural gas in any town wherever they want." Here's some of the testimony from the hearing Friday. We'll hear first from landowner Gail Poorman of Cambridge. Then Tina Fisher, who said she represents the citizens of Idaho, energy consultant David Hawk, and Idaho Conservation League program director Justin Hayes.
I have spoken with our commissioner, our local commissioners, and I believe they have passed a very good ordinance protecting our land there. And I do not understand all of the aspects of this legislation, but I am very concerned that it takes away our local control, also our citizens' voice. And I would just like to say also that my neighbors that may be in support of this kind of industry, I would caution them that not all of us do support the industry, because there are aspects of it that are very dangerous to our groundwater. And just because one person may not be affected, that does not give them the right to affect all of the rest of our wells.
Your financial statements are a matter of public record. I know that the natural gas industry has made campaign contributions to Idaho politicians, including all of my District 9 representatives. Unfortunately for most of us Idaho residents, we can't afford large campaign contributions, and we are our own lobbyists. When asked a question about the siting of the dehydration and compression stations, I did not hear an answer, yes or no, on that. If you take a ruler and draw a line east from Washington County to Wyoming, and south of that are the areas that will be vulnerable to this industry. This state house is our house. It's the citizens of Idaho that invite you here to represent us. I feel like my voice was not taken into consideration, and I know others feel the same way. I watched Chairman Pierce shake hands and converse with members of the gallery that he knew were in support of Bill 464. Did he shake hands with anyone from his district that's in opposition? No. Chairman Pierce, your disrespect to your fellow senators and the gallery at Wednesday's hearing was appalling. As you cast your vote on 464, remember that the effect the natural gas industry has on Idaho will be your legacy.
The citizens and others who do business in the state of Idaho deserve protection from county officials and county commissioners and planning and zoning people who want absolute control with no expertise, and in some cases have a blatant agenda to prevent you from working in the county at all. The state legislative and executive branches serve in that role of protection. The appropriate exploration and extraction of hydrocarbons affects all Idahoans, regardless of what county in which the minerals may be found. Local authorities do have the opportunity to change the state rules, just as any citizen does, by coming to you and asking the state legislature to change the laws and ask the Department of Lands to change the rules and regulations, Department of Water, DEQ, etc. They also have control of the siting of production equipment, pipelines, and the use of county roads.
We have not been opposed to the development of oil and gas here. We spent 6 months working on the rules. We worked hard on those. We tried to create a regulatory framework that protected the interest that we care about and the interest of this industry. Our goal here is not to somehow sneak up, you know, from behind and club this industry and knock them out. Our goal here is to establish rules and laws that work, that are lawful. And this additional language that's been added, it causes tremendous problems. It creates a loophole that allows wells drilled for gas production to be converted into waste disposal wells without further regulation or review. That is very different than what the federal law provides for. This exemption is created in statute. It is not created in rule, and thus a future rulemaking cannot undo it. This is on the books. And I think as a result of this inconsistency with federal statute, the gas industry is actually creating a problem for itself, because to the degree that EPA needs to review any future rulemaking on this matter, they will not be able to accept it until this statute is amended and this section is stripped out of it. So this is a very troubling addition.
That was Idaho Conservation League Program Director Justin Hayes testifying before the Senate Resources Committee Friday. The committee voted 6-3 in favor of the bill, taking away the rights of counties and cities in Idaho to regulate most aspects of oil and gas drilling, including fracking. Before Hayes, we heard from energy consultant David Hawk, Tina Fisher, who said she represents the citizens of Idaho, and landowner Gail Poorman of Cambridge. The Moscow City Council tonight will consider a staff request for direction on whether or not to regulate or ban dogs from the Saturday farmers market. The agenda item says complaints have been received concerning issues that dogs create problems relative to access and ingress and egress through the market, such as dogs being too close to patrons, dog fights, urinating and defecating, unwanted greetings by dogs, and dog handlers not acting responsibly. At last week's Moscow City Council Administrative Committee meeting, however, a professional dog trainer, a veterinarian, and Mayor Nancy Cheney told council members that having dogs in the market has many positive benefits, including allowing people who aren't allowed to have dogs in their apartments to interact with them and as a conversation starter between strangers, among other things. They also pointed out some people may not have enough time in their weeks to both take their dogs for a walk and shop at the farmer's market unless they're able to combine those two activities in a single trip. The city council will also consider limiting objects that overhang streets. Currently, trees must be trimmed to allow 12 feet vertical clearance for vehicles, but other objects are not limited. City Public Works Director Les McDonald last week estimated there are more than 100 basketball hoops installed over residential streets in Moscow. The city council will also be asked to adopt a comprehensive sanitation rate study performed by the company Financial Consulting Group. The council will also be asked to approve a beer and wine license for Nosh at the Red Door and will hear a citizen commission report on the Transportation Commission from Public Works Director Les McDonald. Tonight's city council meeting begins at 7 p.m. at City Hall. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney won the Republican Washington caucuses Saturday, getting 37% of the vote statewide. U.S. Representative Ron Paul of Texas got 25% of the vote. U.S. Senator Rick Santorum of Georgia got 24%, and Newt Gingrich got 11%. Although the Washington caucus does not commit delegates at the Republican National Convention, the polling is expected to give Romney a boost going into tomorrow's Super Tuesday caucuses in 10 states, including Idaho. Ron Paul won in Whitman, Ponderay, Stevens, and Ferry counties. In Whitman County, Paul got 38% of the 316 votes cast countywide. Romney won in Spokane County with 1,521 votes. Santorum came in second with 1,511 votes, and Paul got 1,340. Turnout was the highest ever for a Republican caucus in Washington, with 50,000 showing up statewide, about four times the 2008 turnout. Candidate Ron Paul was scheduled to make his second visit to Moscow today, speaking at the ASUI Kibbe Dome on the University of Idaho campus. He also is scheduled to speak in Idaho Falls tonight. He attracted 1,100 people to a speech in Sandpoint this morning. Paul's second visit to the area was arranged in part because of the high turnout at Paul's February 17th speech at the University of Idaho Student Union Building, where more than 1,000 people were turned away due to lack of space. Paul's visits to North Central Idaho represent the first time an active presidential candidate has come to the area since Democratic presidential candidate Larry Agron of California spoke to the Democratic State Convention in Lewiston in June 1992. Paul is hoping to pick up delegates so he can promote his position on issues at the Republican convention this summer. Idaho has 32 delegates at stake and is one of Paul's top prospects for a win. Romney may also do well in Idaho because of the high number of Mormons here. Republican caucuses will be held at four locations in Latah County tomorrow night. Only registered Republicans will be allowed to vote, and people must arrive at their caucus locations by 7 p.m. in order to vote. The locations are Moscow Junior High School Fieldhouse, Princeton Community Center, Troy High School, and Kendrick Fire Station. Three conservative Democrats joined with Republicans in a late-night Washington Senate session to promote a Republican state budget that avoids tax cuts and makes more severe budget cuts to social programs and education. The budget, which is significantly different from the budget passed by Democrats in the House, will make it unlikely a budget will be passed before the end of the legislative session scheduled for Thursday. That will make a special session inevitable. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather. 60% chance of rain and snow showers before 10 p.m., then a slight chance of snow showers, mostly cloudy, low 26, west winds 15, gust up to 30 miles per hour, less than half an inch of snow possible. 30% chance of snow showers, mainly after 10 a.m. tomorrow, partly sunny, high 35, new snow accumulations less than half an inch possible, mostly clear, low 19, Tuesday. Sunny, high 41 Wednesday, sunny Thursday, high 52, and sunny Friday with an expected high of 55. That's it for the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, news and opinions from the West Side with Eat the Airwaves, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And that'll be followed by Climate Justice Forum live in the studios, hosted by Wild Idaho Rising Tide at around 7:30. I'm Lee Robartis. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. This is KRFP Moscow.